There is a song that we sing quite frequently that kind of has its basis in the text that we're going to read. I want to read this song to you before we begin discussing the text. All things are ready. Come to the feast. Come, for the table now is spread. Ye famishing, ye weary, come, and thou shalt be richly fed. All things are ready, come to the feast. Come, for the door is open wide. A place of honor is reserved for you at the Master's side. All things are ready, come to the feast. Come, while He waits to welcome thee. Delay not while this day is thine. Tomorrow may never be. All things are ready. Come to the feast. Leave every care and worldly strife. Come feast upon the love of God and drink everlasting life. Hear the invitation. Come whosoever will. Praise God for full salvation for whosoever will. From Matthew chapter 22, we're going to begin reading at verse 1. Then Jesus spoke to them again in parables, saying, "The kingdom of heaven may be compared to a king who gave a wedding feast for his son. And he sent out his slaves to call those who had been invited to the wedding feast, and they were unwilling to come. Again, he sent out other slaves, saying, 'Tell those who have been invited, behold, I have prepared my dinner. My oxen and my fatted livestock are all butchered, and everything is ready. Come to the wedding feast.' But they paid no attention." The King James translation says, "But they made light of it, and went their way, one to his own farm, another to his business. And the rest seized his slaves and mistreated them and killed them. But the king was enraged, and he sent his armies and destroyed those murderers and set their city on fire. Then he said to his slaves, 'The wedding is ready, but those who were invited were not worthy. Go therefore to the main highways, and as many as you find there, invite to the wedding feast.' Those slaves went out into the streets and gathered together all they found, both evil and good. And the wedding hall was filled with dinner guests. But when the king came in to look over the dinner guests, he saw a man there who was not dressed in wedding clothes. And he said to him, 'Friend, how did you come in here without wedding clothes?' And the man was speechless. Then the king said to his servants, 'Bind him hand and foot and throw him into the outer darkness. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. For many are called, but few are chosen.'" There are a tremendous number of lessons that can be drawn from this parable. Jesus spoke here on this occasion primarily to the Pharisees. There were many things that he was pointedly saying to the Pharisees on this occasion. There are many things in this parable that apply to every single one of God's children in any age and in any time, and there certainly is a lot of application here for us tonight. I'm not going to try to cover every single lesson that can be drawn from this parable. You may go ahead now and express a collective sigh of relief. But I do have a few things that I want us to observe as we read this. And keeping in mind that in this story, the king is God. The son who is getting married is Jesus. The feast that is prepared is the blessings that come to those of true faith. In other words, those who obey. The slaves or servants, as your version may render it, are evangelists. both in the day of Christ and in our day as well. You know, as we read through this parable, there are a few things that come to mind from the words of the text. Let me go ahead and say, though, that it is a point of contention among some when they turn over to Luke chapter 14 and find a very similar parable. Some say that's just Luke's parallel account to this one. Others say, well, that is not exactly the same. There are some details that are different. It seems to me that that was a separate occasion. Jesus just basically preached the same sermon to a different group of people, maybe, and used a few different illustrations. That is not really a matter of great importance, whether Matthew 22 and Luke 14 records the same occasion from the viewpoint of two different writers, or whether it was two separate occasions where a similar parable was used in messages from Jesus to those people. The point is that there are some things that we need to learn. Brother Leslie G. Thomas wrote several books in his lifetime. I have several of them in my library, and one in particular, a Second Hundred Sermons, I believe, was published in the 1950s. And in that book, he has a sermon entitled Trifling with the Eternal, and it's based on this text. And there's something that he said in that sermon that kind of stuck with me that I hadn't really thought that much about. Some, you know how you'll find something or discover something that you knew, something that's really not new to you, but you just hadn't ever really put it together. He brings out the point that the majority of the Lord's teaching was from the standpoint of inviting. Most of our teaching today sometimes tends to be from the standpoint of warning. Now, Jesus did some warning, but it was usually only after his invitations had been spurned. But it is a point worthy of note that the Lord, in so many of these occasions that we read about in his parables, was teaching from the standpoint of extending an invitation. How could we forget the words that the Lord spoke in that great invitation where he said, "Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest." Here, this parable is about a great invitation, an invitation that has been sent out. Now, it's important that we understand a little cultural fact here. You'll notice the text says he sent out his slaves to call those who had been invited. In that culture, an invitation basically consisted of two stages. The list of those who were going to be invited to this celebration of a wedding was prepared, and everybody on that list was notified. Typically, you would receive the notice that in a certain period of time, you will receive your invitation to come. And so that's why it says they had been invited, and now they are given the call to come. A little bit different from the way we do things, and yet not exactly that much different, because typically, in proper settings, I think you send out an invitation and you ask for an RSVP in return to indicate whether or not that person is going to come. As the Lord speaks of this parable here, he gives several reasons for why those who were invited did not come, did not accept the invitation. Some of those reasons, in fact, I believe all of those reasons are still reasons that people use today for not accepting the Lord's invitation to obedience unto salvation. There were some who were unwilling to come. He says that in the text there in verse 3. And he sent out his slaves to call those who had been invited to the wedding feast, and they were unwilling to come. They had no desire. Now, I've been invited to a lot of things that I didn't have any desire to go to. I've been invited to a lot of things that I didn't go to. And I've been invited to a lot of things that I didn't want to go to, but I went anyway in the interest of good taste or courtesy or whatever. And then I've been invited to a lot of things that I really wanted to go to and really enjoyed. And so you got the whole spectrum there. But at this invitation, there were some who were invited who did not want to go. They were unwilling to go. There have been and there always will be many people who are unwilling to serve God. Sometimes an encounter with those kind of people may be one of the most frustrating things that you will ever experience in your efforts to win souls. But the fact is, everybody is not willing to come to the Master's feast. There is a second reason why some evidently didn't come, and from Luke chapter 14, the other parable, which appears to be probably the same parable at a different time, as I said earlier, that's where Jesus gives a list of reasons why some asked to be excused. One said, I've bought a piece of property and need to go and prove it. Another said, I've purchased a yoke of oxen and I need to look at them. Or I need to prove the oxen, needed to go look at the property, I think. And then the third one said, I've married a wife and I can't come. Even to this day, there are many distractions that keep people from wanting to do the Lord's will. There are a lot of things that get in the way. A lot of those things are engaged in from a temporary mindset. In other words, very similar to the occasion when Jesus called some to follow me and one said, Lord, I will follow you, but first, let me go and bid farewell to my father. Or let me go and bury my father. Let me do this. Let me do that. A lot of people have got good intentions and plan to one day get on the right page with God, so to speak. A lot of those folks never make it because those distractions become more permanent than temporary. And so even on this occasion, there were some worldly distractions that caused people to offer excuses for not coming to the feast. And then there's that statement in verse 5, which says, but they paid no attention and went their way. The King James translation says, but they made light of it. Made light. All of my life I've read those words and considered that means they made fun of the invitation. But actually that's not what it means. In the Greek language in which the New Testament was written, the word that occurs here is the word, if the Greek scholar would close his ears while I say this in case I don't get it exactly right, amaleo, which is really a word for neglect. A word for carelessness, or a word which expresses the idea of just not giving something the consideration that it deserves. They considered it to be unimportant. Now, let me be perfectly clear in saying that there are many things, even many opportunities that will come knocking on our door that are not worthy of our consideration. There are a lot of things that will try to come into our lives that we really just need to let pass on by. If you're in business, one of the first things they'll always teach you, do everything you can to please and to get every customer you can. In the real world, one of the first things that you will learn is you can't please every customer, and there are even some customers that you need to let go on down the road. That's not a good business model, but that's the truth. There are some things that are not worthy of our consideration, but this was not one of them. They made light of it. They considered it to be a matter of non-importance. They did not consider it worthy of their engagement, but they were wrong in that. In the same way that anybody today understand, or anybody today needs to understand, that whenever God and His business present an opportunity to us, it's worthy of our deepest consideration. They made light of it. Anybody know what happened on April the 29th, 2011? April 29, 2011, 1,900 wedding invitations were sent out to 1,900 very, let's just say, exclusive people, inviting them to come to Westminster Abbey and witness the wedding of Catherine and, what was that guy's name she married? You know who I'm talking about. I didn't get one of those invitations. They say thousands and thousands and thousands of people watched on television the broadcast of the royal wedding. I didn't watch it. You may have watched it. It doesn't matter to me if you did or not. I've heard a lot of people say they watched it. Can you imagine what it would have been to have sent your invitation back, or maybe your RSVP back, to Buckingham Palace with regrets and said, not going to be able to make it? I have no idea. I would imagine there probably were some. Surely they had really good reasons, but there were probably some who just said, I don't want to go to that silly wedding. Can you imagine turning down an invitation to come to a royal wedding? That does not hold a candle, as we say, to the matter of turning down the invitation of the Lord to come to the feast. And there were some who persecuted the representatives of the king. Their response to the invitation was to persecute the messengers. Even today, there are some who respond to God and to His will with antagonism. It's a fact of life. It's the real world in which we live. Let's include one other little group of things, and then we'll conclude this lesson. Our efforts today to invite people to hear and learn and obey the gospel may in fact be rejected. The reality is, even yet today, a lot of people are not going to respond in a positive way. Even though we may think souls all of 2018, we may have class after class of fishers of men, and those are some of the greatest things I've ever seen. But the reality is, in spite of all of those kind of things, there will be some who will not be interested. Let me give you some reasons why our efforts may not always be successful. Number one, our efforts may not always be successful because we have wasted our efforts on the wrong one. Now you say, wait a minute, David, that doesn't sound right. You know, everybody needs to hear the gospel. Everybody needs to receive the word of God. That's exactly right. But you know, you can't sit down and teach everybody. You can't schedule a Bible study with every single person in this world. And so be selective about who you approach. Maybe we could turn this around the other way and you'd understand it better. Sometimes we waste our efforts because we did not approach the right one. Have you ever felt kind of guilty and under compulsion to talk to people about the truth, and so in order to satisfy your conscience and say, okay, I talked to somebody this week, you picked your cousin, you know, that you've been knowing all your life and already a member of the church. Listen, I'm not picking on anything or anybody. And those kind of things are important, especially as training exercises. But let's understand the fact that when it comes to approaching people with the gospel, we've got a limited selection of people that we have access to. And so let's make sure we don't waste our efforts on someone who doesn't need to hear it. Sometimes we don't choose the right candidate. Sometimes we're making the very best efforts we can. Sometimes we're trying, though, to cut corners. Sometimes our efforts will not succeed because we bypassed the ones who needed the work more than anybody else. Secondly, sometimes our efforts will fail because sometimes we only give half-hearted efforts. The matter of winning souls and teaching people the truth is worthy of all of our effort. It is worthy of our very best efforts. Let's make sure that our effort matches the importance of the message. Sometimes our efforts will not be successful because we have not provided a good example before we started talking. I'm told that Friedrich Nietzsche, probably didn't even say his name right, a famous atheist of days gone by, on one occasion told someone, "If you want me to believe in your Redeemer, you need to act more redeemed." Boy, that cuts, doesn't it? If you want me to believe in your Redeemer, you need to act more redeemed. And then there will be many times when our efforts are met with rejection because people just simply don't care. I wish there were some magic formula that we could follow that would eliminate that as a response. I wish there were some magic words that we could say that would change that, but the fact is that's not reality. There were many who rejected this king's invitation in the Lord's parable. The fact remains, though, no matter who accepts, no matter who rejects, the wedding feast will take place. it will take place with us or without us, with them or without them. As we said this morning, the difference in following God and rejecting God usually comes right down to decisions that we make, responses that we control. We're not forced to God, and we're not forced away from God against our will. It's what we decide. And so it is with soul winning, reaching others, approaching others. It's driven by our choices. Whether we are successful or not depends upon a lot of things. Depends on our preparation. Right now we've got a class full of people who are going through some of the toughest preparation you've ever seen. And I appreciate every one of you for it. It also depends upon our diligence to put that preparation into practice. And obviously it also depends upon the receptiveness of the person that we're inviting. An interesting parable. Still a lot more lessons. I want to talk some in the near future about this fellow who slipped in without the wedding garment. That's something that we need to look into. But our time's up for tonight's lesson, and so we're going to sing this song as an encouragement. If you need to respond to the Master's invitation, I invite you to do so now as we stand and sing.